This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's path with an S.
Hello, and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
And I'm Jackie P.
We're back in the second part of our two-part series. It seems like everything we do is a series now.
We're very official. We just have a lot to say about things.
We do, and in a very organized way, too, right?
It's called a series. That's so official.
That's weighty. This should be on primetime television.
Although we don't have cliffhangers.
Right.
We should work on having cliffhangers.
We should do more of that. I think we're in this Netflix generation where, like, you can end that episode, right? It can end in a cliffhanger, but it's like, I'm just going to pop the next one in.
Yep.
Right.
I tend to do that. I won't watch. If there's only one series, I'm like, I can't commit to that. I need at least two series.
Yeah.
Two seasons, I mean.
I hate it, like, with The Blacklist. Only been watching it on Netflix, and I always try to get the season post on Netflix, like, 2 weeks before the next season starts. Uh-huh. On network TV, I always try to finish it before that next one starts so that I can keep going, and I never make it.
You can't get that.
Oh. And so I'm waiting like a year in between. So anyway, that was a fun diversion.
Right.
We're going to be talking about back doors today. On our last episode, we talked about going through the front door in recovery, and in this episode, we're going to talk about going through the back door. So we wanted to start with a story, and this is a story that, Jackie, you heard from Pat Carnes.
Uh-huh.
So Patrick Carnes, the kind of father of the sex addiction movement and the guy who's done a lot of research and trained us in becoming a certified sex addiction therapist, told this story and drew some parallels between this and how we need to set up our recovery.
Yeah.
So this story is about Xenophon. He was a Greek general. And at this time, the Greeks had been hired by somebody else. 10,000 Greeks had been hired to go and oust the Prussian king. And so they went to Prussia. Sorry, Persian. The Persian king. I'm not reading well today. They went to Persia. They tried. They failed. And the Persian army harassed them all the way across the continent back to this corner of Asia Minor where the Greek army was trapped. So Xenophon made the decision to set up his 10,000-man army on the top of a cliff, and that's where they were going to face the Persians.
Mm.
And one of his lieutenants came to him and questioned the decision, and Xenophon said something like, this position makes it clear to both our men and the Persians that there will be no running away. Either we fight or we die here. Mm. I think that that's a pretty important recovery principle, not that we set ourselves up in these positions where either we succeed or die.
Right.
But I think I think it can be helpful sometimes to not give ourselves another option.
Yes.
To set up our lives, to set up our recovery so that what we need to do gets done.
So that we're not just kind of dipping our toes in and seeing how the water feels,
mm-hmm.
but it's this step into recovery that says, I have to succeed.
Yeah.
I can't step out because the consequences are too dire.
Yeah. Yeah. So early on when we're working with somebody, we really try to identify what their common back doors are.
Mm-hmm.
And we really try to, I think, unwind some of the fantasy around those back doors and some of the acceptability of taking those back doors. Because the truth is, we don't work with anybody in our office that's mandated to be here.
Right.
Nobody's coming here because they are
court ordered
or they're going to lose a job if they don't get treatment.
Right.
People are coming here of their own volition, which I think sometimes I wish that there was like sex addiction police. It was like,
yeah,
you have to stop or we're writing you a big ticket.
Yes.
Because that commitment device, I think, could be helpful. But we work early on to make sure that we know what those back doors are and that there's a commitment not to use the back door.
Well, and I will say, because at the beginning of my career, I worked mostly with drug and alcohol. And so we did get court ordered clients. A lot of our clients were court ordered. And even though they were court ordered, there still had to be, in order for their recovery to be successful, there still had to be a shift in which they were coming because it was something personal to them. Like, mm-hmm. they were tired of living the way that they had been living,
mm-hmm.
right? They had come to this, like, realization that if nothing changes, nothing changes.
Yeah.
And they weren't just simply jumping through the hoops to get the court off their back. And the clients that were just jumping through the hoops to get their court off their back, they would get the court off the back, and then we'd see them back court ordered again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't work to just have something external saying, you have to do this or we're going to lock you up.
Yeah. That takes me back to this Greek army. Like, imagine if they had just tried to outrun the Persians. Really what they're doing is leading the Persians back to the homeland, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're inviting a war on their home turf. And, you know, that constant running and avoiding, eventually it gets to a point where we realize we can't keep living that way.
Right.
It's not really an option to just stay one or two steps ahead of the chaos or the consequences. We have to turn and face it at some point.
Right. We have to really turn and face it and then fight it.
Yeah.
And I think it's that, I've heard Carnes talk about this a lot, like the client that comes in who is willing to do whatever it takes,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'll say to clients, we're going to have to go wherever we have to go.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you to go there alone, because up until now, you couldn't go there alone,
mm-hmm.
right? It was too painful. It was too unnerving. It was too traumatizing, mm-hmm. to go there alone. And that's why we have an addiction. That's why this has been compartmentalized. But we have to go there. We have to clean out all the corners of the mind,
mm-hmm.
in order for healing to take place.
Yeah. I listened to you say that, and I can even connect with, I can remember some of the fear of the first times that I went to therapy, or that I went to a 12-step group, and that feeling of, I'm going to be doing impossible, painful things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why do I want to do this again? Mm-hmm. Kind of that remembering what's at stake, and remembering why I was willing to do something so far outside of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we see in working with complex trauma is out of complex trauma can come this, I don't know if you call it an ability or the side effect. I'd call it a side effect. It's not an ability. The side effect where high levels of pain and discomfort are tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people on the surface take that as a show of strength. I think really what that is an exhausted nervous system that's just not responding to the stimulus anymore.
Yeah.
And so one of those back doors for people is, I've lived this way this long. I'm used to this pain.
Right. This is so familiar.
Yeah. I'm not used to the recovery pain. So I'll go back to the way that things were.
Yeah.
I know I can tolerate that. I know I can do okay with that.
Yep. Yeah, I remember once, I think I've shared this in a different episode, when I had my cortisol levels checked. And cortisol is a hormone that is a stress hormone.
Yeah.
And actually, we got the results back, and the doctor was like, oh, I think you did the test wrong. I'm going to have you redo it. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know. And so I redid the cortisol test, and you know, she called me back in and was like, I got your results and they're the same. And she was just like, your cortisol levels are off the chart. Like,
mm-hmm.
and she was like, literally, they're off the charts, and they fluctuate, which cortisol levels should fluctuate throughout the day. But she was like, and yours do fluctuate, but they never are on the chart. They're always off the chart. And she was like, you must have so much stress. And I was just like, no. Like, that's crazy. And she was like, no, cortisol is all about stress. Like, you have so much stress. And I was like, it literally took me a year to be like, oh, this, like, but again, I think my cortisol levels had been set. My nervous system had been set at this is what's normal, except it wasn't. And, you know, by the age I was having the test done, my body was like, I can't keep living this way.
So can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
what was that process like to kind of take that information seriously and work on reducing that stress?
Well, I think some of that was getting honest with myself about how the impact of my early childhood what that really was. Because I was always like, I knew what it was, but I was always like, it could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I was so used to minimizing. And
that's a huge
I had to stop minimizing and just say, no, it was bad enough.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it could have been worse. And for other people, it was worse. But it was bad enough that it left lasting impact.
Yeah. How often do we see stuff like that when we get people reading Facing the Shadow, or we get them in, you know, a 12-step group or a recovery group, and they hear the stories of other people and they come back and say, I'm not as messed up as the people in this book.
Right.
Or there are people who have it way worse than me. Mm-hmm.
And that protects us.
I think that signals a big, like, I'm going to take my foot off the gas on this because I am not in a bad position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really, like you said, it's that minimizing and it's that disconnecting from the impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this in a global perspective and I'm saying, I don't really measure up with the baddest of the bad, so it's not a big deal.
Right.
I was doing an EMDR session today with a client, not today, but earlier this week, and he kept coming back to some of the memories. He's like, but other people have had it so much worse than me.
Mm-hmm.
Other people's, you know, stepdads hit him. Mine never hit me. He just expected me to work around the clock for him. He talked about how he was telling me when he would get home from school, he would try to lay down and rest. And his little sister would alert him when his stepdad would come in so that he could sit up and be alert. And he said, I knew when my stepdad was home, my time was not my own anymore.
Mm.
And we would go to the dump and we'd crawl through the dump for bicycle frames or things to take to the swap meet. Because we went to the swap meet every Saturday and Sunday and just tried to sell things. And he was saying in the session, I always thought of myself as my stepdad's gopher. And he's like, I'm realizing now I was just his workhorse.
Mm.
But then he followed that up immediately with, but he never hit me. Mm. And I knew people whose stepdads hit them. He never hit my mom. And I knew people whose stepdads hit their mom. So I think that's a really common backdoor where we, I think, minimize the pain of our story, or we minimize the urgency of our story because it doesn't seem as sensational as somebody else's.
Right. Well, or I would always, I would hold kind of this, well, I'm functional. And all of my siblings are functional, right? We all graduated college. And, like, we couldn't have done that if we had come from that kind of a household.
Right.
And so, clearly, it really wasn't that bad. And I would point to evidence, you know. But what I've since realized as I started to reframe and reassess things is, there was a part of why we were successful that came from the trauma we came from.
Yeah.
Right? It was this, like, fear of not being good enough, this fear of not having enough, this, like, it has to be different, right? Like, my dad was not college educated. And I think for all of us, we were like, okay, if we want a different life, that's one thing we could put our finger on and say, this will give us a different life, which isn't really true. I mean, there's plenty of college educated people who have behaviors very much like my father.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, but in our childhood mind, that made sense, right? If we're not going to be like dad, we're going to go to college.
You know, and I think that's part of that back door that we see often. Like, I will get fixated on this destination and I won't realize that it's the terror that has me running towards that. It's not the pull of that vision. It's not the, this is why I want to do this, or this is what this connects within me. It's more that if I don't do this, I'm screwed.
Right.
If I don't do this, I end up like whoever.
Yeah.
And I think part of, like we talked about in the last episode, part of going through that front door is turning around and facing that monster that's driving us. And being able to understand what that feeling is about, so that when we turn back around and pursue our dreams, it's not in this way where either we never ever get there because it's not something that we can actually attain, or when we get there, it's okay, I've got to keep moving. It's on to the next thing. There's never any settling. There's never any building up resiliency and resources. It's always on to the next
thing. And that's where I think, like, we work with a lot of clients who have this perfectionism, and that's a huge backdoor. That perfectionism is really this, I'm going to have all my bases covered and covered again and covered again so that I don't have to face that.
Oh, that's a huge, huge backdoor for me. Like, I've got to have this all thought out and I've got to have the perfect plan for this mm-hmm. because I've only got one shot.
Right. In that, like, I have no weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
which maybe, you know, can fool us into thinking like I've got it all together and I don't have trauma, but it actually is the trauma that's driving that perfectionism that says I can never, and it's an exhausting way of living, right? But sometimes, and we know this from the literature around trauma-informed therapy, which is they may hold it together so well, but eventually that body will give out and they yep. will end up with some life-ending diseases.
Yeah.
Because the system is so, it's been so wired and so pressed so hard for so long that it simply can't do it anymore.
Yeah. There's a big link between, I think, even things like arthritis, heart failure, coronary disease.
I think ALS.
Which are all cortisol MS, related, yeah. if mm-hmm. if I'm remembering. That there comes a time where in short amounts of time and short bursts, cortisol is really helpful. Over right. time, it's like corrosive acid.
Yes.
In our body.
Yep.
And when you were talking about the perfectionism, I was thinking of the work that I've been doing lately on kind of developing professionally. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things my business coach was working with me on was just when you have an idea and you're reasonably sure you need to move in that direction, get that first draft done as fast as possible
mm-hmm.
because 80% of the hardest work is going to be done in that first draft.
Mm.
And then you need to get used to going back and refining and refining and refining until it's complete enough
mm-hmm.
to be what you need it to be.
Well, and also being able to, you know, after you've gotten kind of that bulk of the first draft done, then letting other people help in that refining process, yeah. getting other eyes on that, right? And yeah. that's not about I wasn't perfect enough or I didn't get it right enough, but it's just this, like, I have been so immersed in this, I need other eyes who have not been yeah. to see what I can't see.
And we see that in our groups a lot. People who are struggling with this perfectionism backdoor will come in with, oh, I had... there was a crisis this week, mm-hmm. but I'm fine now. And they'll give a report of what a hero they were
mm-hmm.
and how they brought it all back together and how everything's fine now. Not really letting people see what the real mess is.
Right.
Not really letting people help them with that. It's more this, I'm coming and giving myself an A each week.
Right.
And that's what I need.
Well, or we'll see them coming and saying, I'm not really connecting with anyone here in this group.
Yep. Yep.
Which is always a backdoor, uh-huh. right? Like, I'm not really connecting with anybody, but I'm never going to connect with anybody because then that backdoor would be shut.
Yeah.
And I don't have an escape route. And there's a lot of fear that goes back to these attachment wounds about what would happen if you did connect with somebody,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and they can find all sorts of reasons why they're not connecting with people. We don't have things in common. We're at different phases of life.
That terminal uniqueness.
Yes. Yes, that kills them, right?
Yeah.
Like, that terminal uniqueness is deadly. And so what they're not looking at is the fact that nobody's going to connect with me because I'm not letting people connect mm-hmm. with me. I'm finding mm-hmm. reasons why. And that takes me back to that movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer,
uh-huh.
right? Like, when I would start to date, my brothers knew that movie. They were younger than me. And you know, I'd date somebody and I'd be like, oh, they were fine. And they'd be like, he smells like soup, right? And I'd be like, yeah, something like that. Like, I couldn't really put myself into that relationship because yeah. I was, in my mind, all relationships would bring hurt eventually.
Yeah.
And why would I do that to myself? So I would, you know, go on a date or two, have some fun, but then let's cut it off because then neither of us are going to get hurt.
Yeah. I think that I would have the opposite experience of that I would date and I would put like the weirdest parts of myself forward because I couldn't fathom that somebody would want to accept me.
So if they accepted after that, we were good.
Oh man, we need to have an episode where we talk about embarrassing date stories because I have a slew of them.
And I don't really.
Well, good. Okay, so I'll just talk about
because I never took it that far, right? I mean, I look back and I'm like, I did some things to shut it down that are embarrassing to me now, but I did, you know, protect myself from a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah, I didn't shut it down from the I'm better than this. I shut it down from there's no way that anybody who's basically decent could have any kind of interest in me.
Yes, we could do an episode on that. I still have my share of embarrassment of how I would not let them ask me out.
Okay, so here's a call out, impromptu call out. If you have embarrassing date stories that highlight recovery principles, please send them to thanksforsharingpodcast@gmail.com.
Because this will be fun.
That will be a delightful episode.
Right.
No, but that back door of externalizing anything that's going on with us, mm-hmm. it must be something with them, or it must be my reflection is so repugnant, nobody right. could want that. And so we end up putting some of the grossest parts of ourselves forward, or some of the least attractive parts of ourselves forward.
And I talk with my clients about, you know, if there is a front door to recovery, there is always a back door to recovery.
Yeah.
And I'll feel sometimes with certain clients, you've got your eye on the back door.
Yeah.
What is that about? Why are you planning your exit? Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that. Can we close the back door? Because usually they're getting distressed emotionally. And that's when they've got the eye on the back door and they're starting to plan their exit.
Yeah. The clients I see who are successful in long-term recovery, they have methods and they have, I guess you could call them rituals, around checking those back doors. Mm-hmm. Not checking to see if they're open, but making sure they're closed tight.
Right.
I could think of several instances where clients have come to me and said, I need to just be accountable on this because I know it's a back door. Mm-hmm. I've been, and then they'll outline XYZ, I'm setting up for this kind of relapse. Mm-hmm.
This thought went through my brain.
Yeah.
And so I need to let you know about it so that it doesn't start getting traction.
Yep. Yep. I have to be accountable on that because I know if I let this story spin out in my head, it's going to end up with me acting out, or it's going to end up with me less than honest.
Yeah.
So I would encourage our listeners to adopt some of that commitment to noticing what the back doors are. Mm-hmm. I think the end of the story of Xenophon, it would be tragic if the Greeks were massacred on top of that cliff.
And they all died.
Right, and then they died. I think the reason why we tell this story is because that decision to fight on top of that cliff and to eliminate other options forced them to succeed.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a sucker for a good story. I love a good story because it makes me think of things, and it makes me sometimes put myself in that situation. Now, because I'm a female, I probably never would have been in the situation and being in Xenophon's army. But I could imagine, right, like that must have been terrifying.
Yeah.
To know there's no retreat here. Like we win or we die. And kind of imagining the process one would have to go through in their head to get to that place where they fight. Mm-hmm. And I think often in recovery, it's a similar process, right? Like what we are asking clients to do is terrifying. We are asking them to let go of the one thing that has been consistent for them, right? That they have been able to count on. I've said many times to drug addict clients, right? Like your drugs probably have a far better track record than any human being you know, right? They never, when you called your dealer, he was never like, oh, I'm not available.
Yeah.
I'm busy, right? That dealer was always available. And the drugs were predictable. You knew how they were going to make you feel. They were available. So that availability, that consistency, that predictability, human beings just don't always have that great of a track record.
Yeah.
So we're asking them to let go of this attachment that has been there for them, probably more than the human beings in their life. And we're saying, let's figure out a different way to do this. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And so, what we have to go through psychologically to kind of turn and take our eyes off the back door and turn and say, okay, I'm all in. And I'm staying all in. Like, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have this story like with Xenophon where they were successful. And we have a lot of stories in the recovery rooms of people who were successful, right? Yeah. And they say, and then I never drank again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting healthy in my relationships, mm-hmm. right? Though there's always those stories, and that's what keeps us in recovery.
Definitely. So at the end of this episode, we want to remind you that your story matters. And remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, which is Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com.
Thanks.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.